It's extra time.
He shoots, and it's a goal!
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. It's me, Patrick Van Straten, your host as usual. And today I'm joined by returning favourite, some would say returning champ, Doogie Critchley. How are you, Doogie?
Returning champ. Wow. God, I feel honoured. I'm fine, thank you. How are you doing, Pat?
I'm not bad. I'm being shown up by you, though, because I'm now at a point where in the morning I consider putting on a normal t-shirt, but then I just put on a gym shirt knowing I'm going to work out later, whereas you are wearing a collared shirt, which is quite remarkable.
I don't really know what came over me this morning. I saw my football shirts and I went, just not today, actually, not this day. But yeah, got the collared shirt on, feeling quite smart, but yeah, let's have it.
Yeah, well, today we are going to be creating an 11 from the current bottom teams in the Premier League. Bottom 10 or 11, we'll kind of see, though I've gone mostly bottom half because, you know, it gets a little bit shady up in the top half. The table's still in flux. We wanted to see whether we could make a really, really good team from the rest of the league, because there's constant talk about how deep the rest of the league is, how many good players there are in relegation threat inside this season. So this was an idea from JChator16. He sent this to, Joe and Chris on Twitter, and it was forwarded to me, but we're going to use it right here. And I also want to give a shout out before we start to Pratik Shetty and a guy on Twitter who goes by OMXRXCV, think he might be Elon Musk's and Grimes' child. They read my notes on the latest podcast episode, which I'm pretty certain nobody does apart from Mike Atkins. And I said I'd give them a shout out. And I am going to. So,
oh, nice.
Dukes, let's get into this. And I think we should probably go back to front, right? Goalkeeper. You see a lot of traffic when you're a goalkeeper in the bottom half of the league. And there are quite a lot of bad ones, I actually think, right now. But do you have a favourite of the lower half of the Premier League clubs?
I do. I mean, particularly this season, in Vicente Gaeta. I just feel like he's been the standout keeper in the bottom half. He's only conceded 32 league goals in 29 league games this season. Now, some of that is that down to Hodgson's system, but when called upon, he's been really, really excellent. So they've only conceded one more goal than Man City and seven fewer than Chelsea. They've actually got the sixth best defensive record in the Premier League. And that's despite conceding the 13th most amount of shots, which is 13.6 shots per game. So he's really overperforming. According to expected goals, he's conceded 11.8 goals fewer than he should have, which is only topped by Dean Henderson's 11.9 at Sheffield United. And obviously you can't give all the credit to a goalkeeper there, because it does come down to their defenders as well, you know, putting in late blocks, making last ditch challenges, etc. But you know, a fair chunk of it has to go to the keeper. And for a 33-year-old free transfer signed from Getafe in August 2018, I just feel like he's been one of the signings of the last few years, really. And it's unfortunate that at 33, this is probably his pinnacle, but he's playing well in a side that keep on defying expectations. I keep on predicting them at the start of every season to go down. And he's just had a remarkable campaign that I think deserves a lot of respect.
Yeah, I quite agree. I think he's been absolutely sensational. And it's weirdly kind of gone under the radar. Like, Dean Henderson has been getting a ton of credit, but we haven't really seen quite as much for Guaita. In fact, generally, I think maybe because Palace were never truly in danger because they had that hot start to the season. People didn't think about it quite so much. Whereas when you're seeing a team get pummeled again and again and again, or when you're seeing a team who are truly like flying up the table rather than just comfortable in the middle, you don't really, you think about those guys at the extremes a little bit more. I mean, I think Guaita is a really strong candidate, but I also think we should talk a little bit about Martin Dubravka, the Slovakian keeper at Newcastle, who's also been having a really good season. Did you know his contract at Newcastle apparently runs until 2025?
Blimey, he's in for the long haul.
Yeah, he's going to be so old.
I hope the Saudis like him.
Well, I think they probably should on the base of this season. Apparently, he's conceded 8.7 goals fewer than XG predicts. 8.7, which is absolutely nuts. And Henry Hill, who was on the podcast last week, he and I have this running bet that I said Newcastle will finish in 15th place or lower, and he said higher. Yeah, Dubravka's kind of keeping them up there. They're currently 13th. They're 8 points above relegation. This is despite the fact that if you go to Understat, which is where we get our expected goals numbers often, They say that by expected points, Newcastle are the worst team in the Premier League. And when you look at their talent, that's kind of hard to argue with. They are appallingly made. But Dubravka, I think, has been absolutely fantastic. However, I think you've made the right call. I think Gaeta's got to be our keeper.
Chuff with that.
And I think then we should probably move on to fullback. Because to me, right back is maybe the easiest position in this whole team.
Yeah, I mean, I saw your suggestion, didn't even write another one down. I thought it was quite easy. Do you want to go for yours?
Well, I've gone for Djibril Sidibe, who's at Everton on loan from Monaco. And I think the one objection to him is that he's actually played on the right wing quite a bit this season, with Coleman behind him. There's been that weird thing, right, where Ancelotti's kind of played a 4-4-2, but it kind of turns into a 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1. And Sidibe, weirdly, is like almost playing like a defensive midfielder, but on the right wing. So he kind of cuts inside so other guys on the left can push forward. And his numbers are absolutely obscene. He's got 4 assists, which is pretty damn good, just as it is. He's 8th in the Premier League for progressive passes per game. 8th.
Wow.
Despite how bad Everton have been. That's remarkable. He's making 4.3 tackles per game, which is 3rd in the Premier League, and it's the same as Wilfred and Didi. He's making another 2.1 interceptions. I mean, this guy has been absolutely phenomenal. You just can't get past him down the flank. And I think it's really down to him that Coleman looks like he's had quite a decent season as well. I think, Luca Dean on the other wing, he's got 5 assists, but that's barely ahead of Sidibe. And that's given that he also takes a lot of set pieces. So to me, Sidibe is in there, but I would probably also argue for including Dean on the other flank. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I thought they were 2 very good suggestions. I mean, as a backup to Luca Digne, I think sort of Diego Rico probably deserves a shout at Bournemouth. Actually didn't know a lot about him until pretty recently, because he actually signed in 2018 from Leganés, but sort of played a bit part role behind Charlie Daniels last season. But then Daniels' injury this year has sort of given him the sort of free reign of that left flank this year. So he's made 21 Premier League appearances. 5.3 tackles and interceptions per 90, which is absolutely insane for a fullback. You'd expect to see those numbers from sort of an elite defensive midfielder. No one makes more than his 3.3 interceptions per 90 in the Premier League this season. And yes, that's down to, you know, Bournemouth being pretty shoddy defensively once again, inviting a lot of pressure onto themselves, often in sort of transition. I often think they're like, they just leave themselves far too spread apart. So Diego Rico's had to make those interceptions, but he still has, and that shouldn't be taken away from him just because other members of his team can't defend that effectively as a unit. He doesn't offer that much in terms of going forward. 1.2 key passes per 90, which is pretty solid, but actually his passing's not very good as a whole. So he only completes 41 passes per game, which is fine, but only a 67% pass accuracy, and he's not actually attempting that many long balls. But again, I think that might be, you know, receiving often for top defenders in the league, their pass accuracy is just so far above the rest of the league because of the amount of pressure they're under when they're trying to complete passes. So Diego Rico in a side constantly under pressure, you know, his pass accuracy is going to suffer. But still, the second lowest in the Bournemouth squad, I would be slightly concerned about that. Only Callum Wilson, interestingly, completes fewer passes in the Bournemouth squad. So Diego Rico probably deserves a shout. But yeah, Luca Digne has probably been one of the sort of standout, at least in the top 5 left backs in the league for a little while, I would say, in a position that the Premier League, I wouldn't say, is particularly strong in. I think it's got a lot of quality right backs, but left backs a bit weak, really, throughout the league.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. Like, I think some of the people we've seen playing fullback as well, or left back, are quite unusual. You know, obviously Man City have been playing Zinchenko there to quite a large extent. Arsenal have been playing Bukayo Saka there. Chelsea still have used a lot of Marcus Alonso in that position. Luke Shaw's not great for Man United. I mean, you're right. It's actually a pretty weak pool. And I even think that you could argue somebody like Dan Byrne deserves a shout here, who's kind of played a hybrid wing-back, left-sided centre-back, left-back role this season. He's absolutely colossal as well. He's impossible to get around. And to be honest, I think that fullbacks, you can look at their tackle and interception numbers, how often they're beaten. You can look at their dribble numbers, their key pass numbers. But I think centre-backs are truly, truly so difficult to talk about. Because I think that if you asked people who are the better centre-backs in the lower half of the league? They'd say people like Tyrone Mings. They might say Ben Godfrey. They might say Issa Diop. They might say Nathan Ake. And some of those are accurate and some of them aren't. But when you look at those teams, they're all in the teams they play for. They're all in the bottom five defensive sides in the league this season. Like, people will say Tyrone Mings has been great. Nobody has conceded more goals than Aston Villa. They have been atrocious defensively. Absolutely atrocious. And yet I see praise for basically all their players all the time. You know, people like Grealish is world class and McGinn's great and Vesely's great and their fullbacks are good and Mings is fantastic. And you think all those guys can't be good and have the worst defence in the league. That's not how it works. So I've really, really been struggling for centre-backs. And I actually think that I have my doubts about Burnley just because they play such a restricted system. I think their centre-backs have an easier job. But I'd have more faith that Tarkowski is good than I would that Mings is good.
Mm.
Like, I don't know. I don't know if that makes sense. I mean, to be honest with you, I think Lewis Dunk should probably go in because Brighton have conceded the same number of goals as Burnley and actually Tottenham this season. They've conceded one more goal than Chelsea. And I think they do play quite a difficult system. Like, Dunk is one of the best long passers in the league from centre-back, actually. Like, huge numbers of long passes, extremely reliable, dominant in the air, is playing in a totally different side. You know, like, when you think about his adaptation, he was getting a lot of support a couple of years ago because he was playing well in a pretty conventional 4-4-2 setup under Chris Hughton. Now he's playing in a much more kind of modern, progressive three-at-the-back possession system, and he still looks excellent. Obviously started this season with an absolutely incredible through ball in the very first game against Bournemouth. I think Lewis Dunk should probably go in, and then my other shout would maybe be Tarkowski. But I'd also think about Jerry Mina, I think, is really good. I think he's kind of underrated, and he's a real goal threat as well. I mean, who are your favourites in the centre-back spot?
Well, I actually had a couple of other shouts as well. I think Jan Bednarak deserves to be in the consideration as well. I think he's by far and away Southampton's best centre-back, especially with Yannick Vestergaard really struggling this year. We've barely seen any of Kevin Dantzer. Yoshida's really aged out, and he's been pretty solid. I mean, he's, you know, completing 4.4 tackle interceptions per game, 69% tackle success rate, over a 70% aerial dual win rate as well. Very good in the air. He's attempting a lot of long balls, which brings his pass accuracy down to 75%, but is 81% on just his short passes. And only Ward-Prowse and Højbjerg have played more minutes in a squad that has sort of... It's just been so inconsistent, Southampton. It had a really dodgy period. Then they won, I think they went 6 games unbeaten. And then going into the enforced break, they had only had 1 win in 5. So I think Bednarak deserves a bit of a shout. Mason Holgate, I've been impressed with this year as well.
Definitely.
With Michael Keane sort of experiencing a bit of a drop-off, Mason Holgate wasn't really favoured under Marco Silva, sent out on loan to West Brom last year, who seemed to manage to pick up really good loan players, West Brom. They've got a really clever recruitment strategy. But 22 Premier League appearances this season, 3 assists, 83% tackle success rate, which is really, really elite. Very good in the air as well, over 55%. Solid passer as well. And yeah, alongside Yerry Mina, has sort of steadied a bit of a ship under Carlo Ancelotti. Although they have looked, you know, there's not been that many clean sheets under him either. But yeah, I'm happy with Lewis Dunk, and then really any of those names. I probably edge towards James Tarkowski, with Mason Holgate maybe in third. I don't know what you think about that, Pat.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. I think Tarkowski in alongside Dunk is a really nice centre-back pairing. And then the two, we'll go for those two Everton full-backs either side.
Sounds good.
I think that's pretty exciting stuff. The midfield, do we just have to put Grealish in? Does he just go straight in?
I think he has to, probably, on the basis of this season. I didn't even bother doing any research about him because I thought it was almost a guarantee. And I'd probably put Buendia in automatically as well.
I agree. I agree with both of those. I think Buendia is... If I could only buy one player from the bottom half of the table, I would pick Buendia over Grealish.
Yeah, like, yeah, I think I'd agree with
that. I think he's much younger. I truly think he's better. I mean, he's got 7 assists. He's going to get relegated. So you could probably get him for a song. He's completing 4.1 dribbles a game. So only Alan Saint-Maximin, Wilf Zaha and Adama Traore are completing more. And he's also at 4 tackles and interceptions a match. I mean, I truly don't... There's no hole in his numbers. And he's 22 and it's his first season in the Premier League. I mean, I think he could go to literally any club and he'd be fantastic. And I don't really understand why there's so much fuss about Adama Traore right now. When Buendia looks like the better player, he's more well-rounded. He's like Adama Traore, but a bit more of a footballer, I think.
I definitely agree with that. I think Adama Traore's physical capabilities overshadow what is, you know, not necessarily the best player on the ball, whereas Buendia is deceptively fast. He's very good at picking through balls. He's just an all-round, really exciting attacking midfield prospect. And as you say, I wouldn't think he wouldn't look out of place in this Liverpool side, for example. I think he could work really well in that, in a team of that quality. So I think the sky's the limit for him. And what an exciting player, and what an exciting time to be Buendia. He must be absolutely buzzing.
He's one of those players who, like, I've tried not to get too excited about, because there's the part of me that's like, Arsenal need a creative passer this summer who's not too old and who will also work defensively and who can dribble. And I think Buendia, go and get him. Just go and get him. He can play wide. He can obviously play as a 10. Like, he can do so much stuff. Just go and get him. But I know we won't. So it's a little bit like Wan-Bissaka, where I was kind of like, oh, he's really good. I know he's going to go to a club that I hate. Like, that's my concern. And so I'm a little bit sad about him, but he definitely deserves a spot here. I mean, who are your shouts for the other midfield slots? Have you picked a formation?
I'd sort of gone for a 4-4-2.
Of course you have.
Old school. But, you know, if we put Grealish and Buendia in, I'm not sure. Maybe Buendia could be... Maybe I'd go for a sort of diamond. So my sort of holding player I put in was Etienne Capoue. I think at 31, he's unlikely to get another move. But what a bargain from Spurs. I mean, he was bought 5 years ago for £6.3 million. And he's been a really solid performer. He's rarely injured as well. He's played at least 36 games in all competitions in three of his four full seasons at the club. And this year, he's looked very solid again. I think it always slightly goes under the radar when Watford were choppy and changing managers at the start of the year. They had that pretty disastrous spell under Kike Sanchez-Flores in the middle. But under Nigel Pearson in particular, I think Capoue's looked back to his best. 24 Premier League appearances, 2 assists. I mean, you don't get the sort of all-round display you'd want from a top player. And that's why he's at Watford. But 5.4 tackles and interceptions is really very good in whatever club. And he's a very solid passer as well, close to an 85% pass accuracy. Wins nearly 70% of his aerial duels, which is really rare for a central midfielder. That's more akin to a very elite centre-back. Not the biggest dribble numbers, only 0.9 dribbles, but just a really solid Premier League performer that, in terms of defensive midfielders, you often see there's a bit of a dearth of quality in elite defensive midfielders in the bottom half of the Premier League. So I think Capoue definitely deserves a shout.
I agree. I think maybe let's... I'm thinking about a 4-2-3-1 here, because there are kind of two or three more players that I'd like to see make it in. And firstly, I think that I'd like partnering alongside Capoue, Pierre-Emile Højbjerg, who I think has had a really great season. I was writing about him the other day, and I called him a cut-price Thomas Partey. And the more I look at his numbers, the truer I think that is. I mean, he's 24 years old, so he's obviously a couple of years younger. 4 tackles and interceptions a match is pretty much identical to Partey. He's completing 1.5 dribbles a game with a 75% success rate, which is, again, very similar to Partey, though Partey's success rate, I think, is a little higher. It's in the 80s, but still. And this year, he's making 5 deep progressions per 90. So deep progressions being passes, ball carries, or dribbles, which start outside the final third and end up in the final third. So basically, can he move the ball from the midfield into the danger zone? And he can. Like, 5 deep progressions per 90 is excellent, especially on a side like Southampton, who are not exactly loaded with guys who are great at receiving the ball in those positions. But last year it was even higher. Last year I think he was at 7 per 90. And to put that in context, that was in the top 10 players in the Premier League. Not in the bottom half. All players in the Premier League, He was among the top 10 players at getting the ball into the final third. That is truly, truly special. And I think it's no wonder, given as well that his contract runs out next summer, that we've seen him linked with Spurs. It just shocks me he hasn't been linked with anyone else. I mean, we talked about him before and you said he'd be an interesting bit of squad depth for Manchester United. Mm. And I completely agree. To me, I think almost any top club could use him, even the Liverpools and Man Cities. He might not be quite as secure on the ball as a Gundogan or something, but like, he's much more well-rounded right now and he's much more reliable fitness-wise. So I would like to put him in alongside Kapu. Then we've got Buendia on the right. We've got Grealish in the middle. On the left wing, I think I want to put in Ismaïla Sarr.
Do you, Fal? I went De La Feo, actually. So we're on the same, so you know, same club at least.
Okay, so what made you go for De La Feo over Sarr?
I really like Gerard De La Feo. I think he's had such a weird career. Obviously at Barcelona, then went to Everton and did really well under Bobby Martinez. And then Koeman didn't fancy him, loaned him to AC Milan. They then sold him back to Barcelona, and now he's at Watford. He must be very confused, but despite all of that, I think he's done pretty well. So last year, 15 goal contributions in 30 Premier League games. Very solid for a Watford side that were playing pretty well towards the back end of last year under Javi Gracia. This year, 9 goal contributions in 28 Premier League games. Very, you know, solid in what was, as we've said before, pretty mediocre Watford. Well, still, you know, pretty mediocre Watford under Pearson as well. And his numbers are really impressive. So 2.7 shots, which is more than Sadio Mane. It's more than Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. 1.9 key passes, 2.6 dribbles, 0.46 expected goals and assists per 90. And as we've mentioned on other shows, like 0.4 is a very good number if you're in the bottom half. 0.6 is pretty exceptional if you're in the top half. So 0.46 is really good. Down from 0.57 last year, and it was about 0.5 the year before. Just a really consistent performer. And I'd love to see what he could do with a side that would offer him, you know, the protection of an Etienne Capoue, Pierre-Emerick Højbjerg midfield, and linking up with Buendia and Grealish, I think it'd be really exciting. I admit that Sarr probably has a much higher ceiling, particularly with his age, etc. But I think De La Feo deserves an enormous amount of credit for his body of work at Watford since his transfer.
Yeah, and also, I mean, he's got 9 goal involvements this season, which is a third of Watford's goal output. I think this is a difficult one because Sarr, I think, has been better when he's played than De La Feo. He's played about 1,200 minutes and he's got 8 goal involvements. De La Feo has played 2,100 minutes and he's got 9 goal involvements. On the other hand, I think you can count that against Sarr, that he's played relatively little.
Took him a while to break into that first team, didn't it?
Yeah, but I don't think that was necessarily his fault. I mean, the team was all over the place.
Oh, he's very young as well.
And they had 2 other managers to go through before they got to this point. But he's also a 22-year-old in his first season in the Premier League. And he's at, I think, over 0.6 expected goals and assists per 90, which is wild. I mean, he's between Lacazette and Aubameyang. Lacazette's above him and Aubameyang's actually below him this season. He's taking more shots, creating more chances than ever. But, yeah, 1,200 minutes is not that much, and you could argue that he might have cost his side by maybe he wasn't playing because managers didn't like him, but maybe he wasn't playing because he also wasn't ready yet. And then you kind of wonder, well, has he maybe cost his side by not being ready sooner, rather than, you know, he deserves credit for being on a sinking ship now? I mean, it's hard to gauge. I don't know, Deeks. I don't know. I think De La Feo's got more minutes. And he has got more goals and assists. And I think expected goals and assists say he should have 11 instead of 9. So I'm happy to put him in if you want.
Yeah, I'm very happy with that. I also think De La Feo could probably work in a variety of situations as well. This side, what's sort of building, might hopefully see a bit more of the ball consistently than Watford. Less of a counter-attacking threat. I think De La Feo would work quite well in that. But I've also got a couple of other shouts that could maybe be in discussion for the bench. I've seen people give a lot of credit, and I think rightly so, to Dwight McNeil at points this year. Really, you know, not the most well-rounded footballer in that he's not the paciest. He's not going to beat a player, you know, one-on-one all that much. Although having said that, He's still, you know, completing 2.2 dribbles, but his left foot is really exceptional. I think his set piece delivery is superb. 5 assists and 2 goals this year in 29 Premier League appearances. Still only, I think he's only 21, and has done a lot to change, you know, Burnley's reputation at least. So he deserves a lot of credit. And I also think if we'd done this last year, Felipe Anderson might be in the mix. And actually, I was intrigued to sort of have a look at him because he's been sort of fairly criticised at points this year because he's only got 1 goal and 4 assists in 22 Premier League games, which is not great for a player that cost, was it 36 million? I think it was a hell of a lot. But if you look at his skill set, I actually think a change of position could be in order. So 4.2 tackles and interceptions, 1.4 shots, 1.5 key passes, 3.9 dribbles. Like these are pretty exceptional numbers. And 0.32 expected goals and assists per 19, a struggling West Ham side isn't to be sniffed at. It's only 0.04 down from where it was last year. Only 27. And I was thinking, Felipe Anderson as a left wing back in someone like Chelsea's system would be, when they play that three at the back, would be really interesting, I think. Because he doesn't necessarily have that sort of killer instinct in and around the box that you'd necessarily want, although maybe that's down to West Ham not getting in and around there too much. But yeah, left wing back, Felipe Anderson, maybe in the future, I don't know.
Well, he did play there a little bit, didn't he, at Lazio? Like that would be kind of an interesting spot for him. I mean, if we were just drafting the best players from the bottom half of the league, I would 100% say Felipe Anderson has to go in. But we have kind of gone on this season, right? Mm. And it hasn't been good. I mean, it hasn't really been good for anyone at West Ham. Because otherwise, yeah, I think Sepp Haller would be in with a shout for our striker. But I'm going to say of all those ones, I think Deo Lefeu is probably the most deserving candidate.
For sure.
He's certainly had the best season. Right, so that leaves us with one spot. And striker, I think, is pretty contentious.
Mm.
Do you want to go first or
should I? I'll shoot. I thought about this and I very nearly went with Chris Wood. I very nearly went with Dominic Calvert-Lewin. But I've actually gone for this side with Richarlison. 23 years old, 27 Premier League appearances this season, 10 goals and 3 assists, which is a pretty good return in an Everton side that were pretty trash under Marco Silva until December. 13 goals and 1 assist last year. And although he might not have the physical presence of either Wood or Dominic Calvert-Lewin, I think he brings, and he potentially works better in a two as well. He brings a lot to the table in terms of his all-round play. So 2.7 shots, you'd like to see that improve. And at 23, this is where you really want to see him kick on, get those shot numbers up around, you know, 3.5. But 1.2 key passes as well, 1.8 dribbles, 0.57 expected goals and assists per 90, which is really very good, especially considering when he's got the best expected assists in the whole Everton side, above Luka Dina, and his expected goals tally of 0.33, not fantastic, an expected goal every 3 games, is only topped by Calvert-Lewin. So I feel like Richarlison, you know, he had a lot of praise when he was at Watford, he had a lot of praise last year, less so this year. But I think in terms of the most well-rounded forward, I don't think there's really anyone better than him.
Yeah. I mean, you've really got me there because I really love Richarlison.
I've lured you in.
I kind of thought you were going to go for Danny Ings, to be honest.
No, I didn't even consider him, to be honest.
He's got 15 goals.
He's a great finisher, but I want more.
But he's only been outscored this season by Salah, Aguero, Aubameyang and Vardy. And he's been responsible for 46% of Southampton's goals in the league. 46%.
He's had a phenomenal year, but I'm looking for the future with my side. I'm looking for an all-rounder. I don't know. Danny Ings is great, but he's no Richarlison in my mind.
Okay, well, here's the thing. Again, I think that like if I had to sign a player, I would probably want Richarlison, but I think I'm going to go for Dominic Calvert-Lewin. You mentioned him there. 13 league goals, so 3 ahead of Richarlison this season. 0.72 expected goals and assists per 90. That is the same as Sadio Mane.
It's pretty exceptional.
And he and Richarlison have really carried that team this season. Like, nobody's got more than 3 goals for the club in the league except those two guys. And they've scored 23 between them. And I mean, previously we were looking at Calvert-Lewin. You know, he'd obviously played as a kind of wing back. He was just a kind of big bruiser and a bit of a a bit of a nuisance for centre-backs, but now it seems that he's just turned into a quality striker. And I mean, it helps that Ancelotti's found a way to get more attacking power out of that side. Obviously, in the full-backs, we've been talking about... you've got guys like Iwobi who could still come back in and be useful. But I think Calvert-Lewin has just taken a huge step forward this season. Like, he's way ahead of these other guys in the category for expected goals, you know, substantially ahead of Ings and Richarlison. And while his skill set might not be quite as rounded, he is a nightmare to play against. Like, Chris Wood's a nightmare to play against, but Calvert-Lewin has got all the strength plus some pace and also is much, much younger, which kind of makes me think that his ceiling could be really high. And I think if it weren't for the Euros being delayed, he would be within his rights to expect a place, especially given some of the injuries. Like, if the season had carried on as it was going and, you know, Kane's fitness had been in doubt and Rashford's fitness had been in doubt.
I think Tammy's was
And Tammy as well. Then you would kind of say, like, I should be going, especially if, say, Vardy's considered too old to go. You'd say, I'm actually the form English striker in the Premier League. I deserve to go. So is this what it comes down to? DCL versus Richarlison for the last position?
It's a pretty good debate. And I feel bad on Calvert-Lewin because I actually put him in one of my pretty spicy combined 11s on Twitter around November, being like, I think he was in my overrated 11, and people kept on replying being like, who's ever rated him? And I was like, well, he's made a lot of appearances for Everton over the last 3 years. He just doesn't get any goals. And I've been proved completely wrong by Carlo Ancelotti getting the most out of him. Now looks like a proven Premier League striker, and long may it continue. You know, fair play to him. So, I mean, I prefer Richarlison as an all-round player, but I think on the basis of this season, I'd be very happy with Calvert-Lewin going in as well.
Well, especially given as well the wide players that we've got. I think we've got so much creativity coming from them that we can afford to have Calvert-Lewin there.
It makes sense.
I don't think we necessarily need quite as rounded a game. So that's our team. So we've got Gaita in goals, Sidibe at right back, Dean at left back. Our centre backs were Dunk and Tarkowski, I think we went for in the end. In the midfield, we've got Capu and Højbjerg kind of as the holding players. Then in front of them, Buendia on the right, Grealish through the middle, De Olofeu on the left, and Dominic Calvert-Lewin up front. That's a really good... Where do you think that team would finish in the Prem?
This year, with some, you know, questionable form of, you know, Spurs and Arsenal, I'd probably go... I think it would challenge for sort of eighth.
Really?
Potentially. Yeah, I'd go with eighth. What do you reckon?
I think it would probably be... Yeah, you know what, actually, the top six... Assuming normal service is resumed, the top six plus Leicester... Yeah, I mean, I think it's a more talented team than Wolves. So I guess it depends who we get in as coach. But
I think it could challenge Wolves. And probably, I mean, over a season, you'd expect it to beat Sheffield United. But then, you know, who knows with Sheffield United? So I don't know.
Yeah, you'd expect a lot of teams to beat them, and yet they haven't.
I kept on wanting to include Sheffield United players. And then I was just like, oh, I can't. They're comfortably in the top nine. This doesn't work for this podcast. It's mental.
Also, I kind of look at Sheffield United and I'm like, who?
Wanted one of their centre-backs, but...
But that's the thing, like, I mean, everybody right now wants to say, like, oh, these centre-backs are phenomenal. And, like, maybe they are, but maybe they're not. Like, maybe Chris Wilder's just a genius.
He's a magician.
It's totally possible. It's the same way that after Leicester won the league, people are like, Wes Morgan has been a fantastic centre-back all along. And it's like, no, he hasn't. And neither has Robert Hughes.
He's painfully slow.
They're both absolutely dreadful. And everyone realised their back four was an abomination, but they were playing behind N'Golo Kanté. Like, it was like the best defensive midfielder in the last 15 years. So, yeah, I'm pretty happy with our team. Buendia to Arsenal, obviously. Let me know if you agree with that in the comments below. And let us know who you thought we missed out as well and who deserved a shout. Dukes, is there anything people should go and do after this?
Yes. Go and check out Eurofootball Daily and go to Saturday because we launched a new quiz show called The Football Pyramid. It's basically a rip-off of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, but shh, don't tell anyone. And I played the role of Chris Tarrant. It was Hamill versus Joe, and it was a pretty good first episode, I have to say, with maybe a bit of a surprise. So go and check that out.
Interesting. Well, I mean, I feel like I know what happens now. But thank you very much, Doogie. And thank you guys for watching/listening. We will see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
It's extra time.
He shoots, and it's a goal.